Live from Youngstown, Ohio, this is Inside Politics, a weekly program of political discussion and intrigue with occasional injection of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, power brokers, public servants, and plain-speaking Americans from all walks of life. I'm your host, Bruce Dumont. Thank you very much for joining us tonight for our Beyond the Beltway analysis, coming to you this week from the studios of WKBN Radio in Youngstown, Ohio, owned by the Warren P. Williamson family since 1926, one of the early members of the CBS radio network, the first AM, the first FM, and the first television station in the great city of Youngstown, Ohio. It's nice to be with you. We have been in town and in Ohio for the last couple of days, and we'll share some of those thoughts and observations with you as the program unfolds this evening. Also, our phone lines are open for people all over the country from coast to coast. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. As tonight, we come to you from one of the most democratic regions of the United States. Northeastern Ohio has been sending Democrats and big vote totals to Democrats for many, many years, and we'll find out whether there's going to be any change of that in the future, and also talking about the situation here in Youngstown, Ohio. Joining us to share their thoughts and opinions, first of all, we welcome Dan Ryan, veteran talk show host here in Youngstown. He's heard every morning on WKBN. He's been in this market for over 30 years, and again, is really when you come to Youngstown and you want to know what's going on politically, you have Dan on the show, and Dan's been on Inside Politics as a phone guest for a while. So Dan, it's nice to be in your hometown tonight.
And I appreciate your coming here, Bruce. Thank you.
We are also joined by Jerry Austin. He is chairman of Austin Shinecoff, which is one of the country's leading Democratic political consulting firms based in Columbus, Ohio. He's involved in a variety of campaigns. Doug Wilder's campaign for the United States Senate in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Governor Jim Guy Tucker in Arkansas, and also Ken Harper running for the United States Senate in Mississippi, and John Strozier, who's running for Cook County Board President in our hometown of Chicago, Illinois, and the county of Cook, and an old friend of this program. Jerry, it's nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Back in your state. Native
Pleasure.
Of Bronx. You have a Bronx accent. This is not a Columbus, Ohio accent, which is where you have spent most of your adult life.
Well, when I first moved to Ohio, people asked me what part of Massachusetts I came from. Southern Massachusetts.
Representing the Republican Party tonight, David Johnson is here. David Johnson is chairman of the Columbiana County Republican Party since 1989. Columbiana County is just south of Mahoning County, which is where this program is coming from this evening. He's a deacon in the First Presbyterian Church in Salem, Ohio, which is your hometown, and is also president and chief executive officer of Summitville Tiles, which is a national firm selling tiles, I imagine,
manufacturing,
right?
And distributing ceramic tiles, yes, sir.
And a Republican Party activist. It's nice to have you with us as well. 1-800-723-8289, talking politics tonight from the Buckeye State. We're going to get your reaction to problems in this area, because we mentioned Northeast Ohio is not only one of the most democratic regions of the country, but this particular area, specifically Youngstown, because of the auto and steel and coal dropout in 1979. The last 15 years, economically speaking, have not been kind on this community. And downtown Youngstown is, like many other communities around the United States, is trying to survive in the wake of 15 years of economic devastation. What realistically, Dan, because you've seen this change on your watch here in Youngstown, realistically, what can government do to try to help towns like Youngstown and scores of other around the United States to make a comeback?
Well, I think a comeback here has to be locally generated. However, I would say that of all of the mayors that I've seen come and go, Pat Ungaro, who has been mayor now for a long time, I think he's in his 11th year, as a matter of fact, has done one heck of a lot to bring this town back. He has been criticized for using tax abatements to lure industry here. He's built up an industrial park in the city of Youngstown, as a matter of fact, two of them, and both of them pretty well filled. He's brought jobs in, 200 here, 300 there, and so on and so forth. He's worked very hard. That's the only way that it can be done, other than bringing back people from the suburban areas who flew out of Youngstown years ago. bring them back in. The only thing that's going to do that is jobs mm-hmm. and some inducement.
And there's a lot of vitality in the suburban area. Boardman
absolutely.
A lot of malls. And obviously
Boardman is where all of the action is. There's no question.
What role should government play, in your view, David, in helping not only cities like Youngstown, but again, there are hundreds of communities like this around the United States?
Sure. I don't think there's any question. I come from Columbiana County, south of here. We're an Appalachian region county.
Rural.
One out of every 20 persons in our county are at the federal poverty level. Pretty discouraging stuff. And I don't really see a turnaround in this area until we start to get some policies out of Washington that are going to encourage investment, encourage savings, do the kind of things that were done in the early 1980s to help generate jobs growth.
Do the people who live in your county, primarily rural, do they care what happens to Youngstown, Ohio?
Oh, I think they do. I think we're very much tied to the Youngstown region. The greater Mahoning Valley would extend down into Columbiana County. I think very definitely they care.
Do you feel, Jerry Austin, that politics and politicians over the last 15 years have tended too much to play city against suburb, rural against inner city areas with their, you know, in pandering for votes?
Well, that's always a charge that'll be made during election years, but I want to tell you something about Youngstown.
I just asked it as a question.
I know.
It's not a charge.
Dan could probably help me on this, but I believe since 1976, every 4 years, somebody running for president comes to Federal Plaza here and makes some sort of a speech about how they're going to bring Youngstown back, because Youngstown and Flint, Michigan, and East St. Louis, Illinois, are Benton Harbor examples of the decline of industrial cities, and so far, for 16 years, it really hasn't happened. And I don't know if it's playing the suburbs against the cities, but there has been certainly in the last number of years more of an interest in the suburban vote because people have left the cities, less people living in the cities, less people voting in the cities, higher suburban vote.
Is the answer then that government really can't do much in your view?
I don't think
there are external factors that have nothing to do with politicians or incentives.
That's not true. As a matter of fact, the new party chairman of the Democratic Party, who was just elected, Michael Morley, who is an attorney, he ran an aggressive campaign and unseated Don Hanai, who was the Democratic Party chairman for 16 years.
One of the last party machines in the country.
Absolutely. There were newspaper articles all over the state concerning that. But Mike Morley came in with the idea that he was going to play this card, which says, in effect, to the administration in Washington, the Democrats in this area have delivered big votes for you every 4 years. You've come here, you've made promises, nothing has been delivered. And he literally told them, as a matter of fact, that you can't count on that vote unless you demonstrate. There was a fundraiser for Joel Hyatt up in Cleveland. And
Joel Hyatt, the Democratic candidate for the United States Senate,
exactly.
Is the son-in-law of Howard
Metzenbaum,
the longtime Democratic senator.
Okay. That fundraiser held up in Cleveland, Michael Morley and some business people from this area and went to that fundraiser, had a private meeting set up by Hyatt, or really by Metzenbaum, with the President of the United States. Had a 10-minute meeting with him, and literally told the president, you either deliver something to us before the November election, or we can't guarantee that you're going to get the votes for Hyatt in November.
I want to find out where the money comes from to pay for some of these programs that may be able to help cities like Youngstown and similar municipalities around the United States when we continue. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you tonight live from Youngstown, Ohio.
Another day begins in Europe, just as it has for centuries. But along with the familiar sights and sounds of the old world comes a silver bird from the West. Because this morning and every morning, in cities all across Europe, just as the new day arrives, so do we. American Airlines. This morning, American Airlines will touch down in 13 European cities, in 9 different countries, nonstop from cities across the U.S., So whether it's business or pleasure that brings you to Europe, fly the airline that can have you there as early as tomorrow morning. American Airlines, something special to Europe.
Bruce Dumont back from Mahoney County, Ohio. That's Youngstown, Ohio. It's nice to have you with us this Sunday night on Inside Politics. Joining our panel right now, we welcome Jonathan Pentecost. And Jonathan is 17 years old, and this afternoon when I was out at the Canfield Fair, which is one of the great fairs in the United States, they had several hundred thousand people out there today, and it will run through tomorrow. And again, it is a major social, political, and cultural event in the area for a long, long time. I met Jonathan Pentecost, who was in the process of working a booth for the Valley Piano and Organ Company. And I went up and we chatted because we were going to use some of the music that he was providing as bumper music on our program this evening, which we had a little technical problem, so we've not been able to do that. But I asked him what he was interested in doing in life, and he said he wanted to live at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and he's 17 years old, and also recently graduated from Niles McKinley Debate or High School in this area, and in about 21 days is going to be a freshman at Youngstown State University. So, Jonathan, thank you very much. As a 17-year-old, I'm interested in your observations about the future of this particular area. You were born here, raised here. When you're through with school, are you going to stay here, or are you going to go off and go elsewhere?
Well, that's a tough call because growing up in a certain area, you want to stay loyal to your community, and at least I feel you should. However, with the area and the state it's been in, as we discussed before the commercial, I think that this area, as far as the future of the next 20 years, doesn't show much potential unless something major is done.
Like what? What would be major? David, can you give us something major that can happen? So Jonathan and people of his generation can look to this area and say that there's some brightness on the horizon.
Well, we could land a Mercedes-Benz plant here. We could land. We've got something interesting and exciting for the area. Is we've got a new major federal prison. The first federal prison in the state of Ohio is coming to Columbiana County, which is going to bring probably $80 million worth of investment in our area. It's going to provide more jobs. It'll be about 200 jobs. But we need that type of investment by the public sector, which brings with it water and sewer and all the infrastructure needed to sustain other businesses that can grow up.
Jerry Austin, is crime and prevention of crime and detention of criminals, is that not the primary growth area for a lot of areas, not only in Ohio but around the country?
Absolutely. I'm doing work in probably about 17 states, so I see polls all the time, and the number one issue on people's minds is crime. Every time the front page of a newspaper has a story about what happened in Chicago, what happened in New York with these young kids, it just makes crime go even more to the forefront on people's minds. And whether you're involved in trying to bring jobs into a community or schools or whatever into a community, the crime factor is scared people so much now that they want to put them away quicker and faster and longer and throw away the key more than they ever had before.
And are they interested, the people that call your show, Dan, are they interested
in any forms of prevention at all, or is it just lock them up and throw away the key?
Well, lock them up and throw away the key is one of the principal things that I hear a lot, because police officers themselves will tell people, they make no bones about it, that they get very frustrated and very disgusted because they go out and keep rearresting the same people over and over again. Before they turn around or the ink is dry on the paperwork that they've done, the guy is out on the street again. 2 days later, they're picking him up again for another crime. So basically, you know, it's a small percentage, basically, of the overall population that is committing the crime. And that the same people keep getting rearrested because they don't spend any lengthy periods of time behind bars.
But an old adage is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And again, that seems to fly in the face of at least popular political belief right now.
Well, I don't know if it has or not. I mean, take Ohio. We've got a death sentence in this state, capital punishment bill.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't executed anyone in this state for 30 years. I think this whole problem with crime cannot be solved with more attention on counseling and midnight basketball and some of the new programs that we've just spent or appropriated $30 billion to address, but yet not building a single new jail.
You don't think that has anything to do with the prevention? Jonathan, what about that? Do you think that that investment in at the front end, which is a popular thing that Jesse Jackson has said in the past, that the prevention on the front end is going to save you money on incarceration on the back end? And really, if you look at fighting crime strictly on the economics of it,
mm-hmm.
Forget the real or perceived bloodlust that may be involved, economically, that's the way to do it.
Well, thinking along the same lines, it seems that we, as a society, concentrate more on detention than prevention. I mean, I don't have the exact figures, but the state of Ohio spends more every year on building prison facilities than revamping the educational structure. Now, how is that? And I don't understand why that is.
How do you feel the educational structure is responsible for crime?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that rather than concentrating on the youth of America and America growing as a whole, we're concentrating on a quick fix to a problem that we didn't address 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Jerry, isn't that part of the frustration that people are just fed up, whether they're Republicans or Democrats? They are fed up with the old solutions that have not worked?
Well, I think that a lot of people feel that for the past 20 or 30 years, there's been a lot of money and a lot of time spent on prevention, and a lot of money and a lot of time spent on building prisons. I mean, we built 5 or 6 new prisons in this state in the early 80s, and we're about to need more of them. But I think what people are coming to believe right now is that there are, unfortunately, people born in this country who are no good. They're never going to be any good, and they're sick and tired of trying to help them be good and want to put them away and want to electrocute them or whatever else there is to do because they're very frustrated with not being able to get any further along with helping reduce crime in this country. It's just growing too far.
You mentioned, by the way, Joseph Lori, who works for the police department in Boardman, which is the suburban area of Youngstown that we spoke about. He's quoted in the Vindicator today, which is the local paper here in Youngstown. Some moms and dads lack parenting skills. They don't supervise their children. They don't even care about their own kids. There's a fair number of parents not policing their kids. And then they go on to quote a local police officer. There's a general apathy among my generation. I have harder times with moms and dads of my age. Now, what, if anything, can government do to teach people to be responsible?
Well,
this comes back to irresponsibility.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
How do you teach that?
You don't.
Government can't do it, can they?
You know, I think the only answer that has ever been suggested, possibly, is for government to step in and identify these parents who are totally irresponsible and take their kids away from them or limit the number that they have and take them away at birth and raise them themselves or in foster homes where they will be responsible. Because you've got parents that totally don't motivate, don't give any good examples, and don't show them any kind of moral values.
Well, we also look at the situation, again, the horrible story. You know, this program normally comes from Chicago, and one of the lead stories in the nation happens in the town where this program usually comes from.
11-year-old boy.
Last year, two weeks, two 11-year-olds involved in alleged murders.
Now, how did they at 11 years old get to that point where they're out killing people?
Well, the story is that they are victims of the system. They have perpetrated a crime or allegedly perpetrated a crime in the case of the one one boy who was slain by the other gang members. But again, how do you stop that cycle?
Bruce, for 30 years now, we have spent hundreds of billions of dollars on every social engineering program imaginable to try and address these problems, and it hadn't improved, it's gotten worse.
What about, have you done it with schools, though? If you were to look at the record of the United States over the last 35 years, could you stand here tonight, David, and say that we have really done a good job in funding schools at the federal, state, and local level?
I say yes. We spend more money in America on education than any other nation in the world. There's a terrific article.
Why doesn't it work?
Well, I don't know. I think we've got a value problem in this country. I think we have a problem with the breakdown of the American family. There's a terrific article written by William Bennett entitled The Index of Leading Cultural Indicators. And he goes all through and he talks about education, he talks about the level of number of crimes committed, how it's grown from 1960 to 1990. Back in 1960, there were a total of 4 million crimes, violent crimes committed. 1990, 16 million. There are thousands of people on the streets that are being murdered every year in this country. It's become the most violent country in the world.
Jonathan, what's your answer to this issue?
I wanted to ask a question. How do you legislate one's state of mind? I mean, how do you legislate a mindset? And it seems like that's what we're trying to do.
It seems to me also that it is not government, and I think more and more people are realizing that it is not government that is going to answer that.
No.
They are cultural factors, they are religious factors, but there can be a core responsibility of government.
Turn it
to
around.
To make sure that quality education is available.
Well,
now
it
you
is.
Define
okay,
what it is.
Let me just say, you're concentrating on, once again, the small number of people who fall into that category. Your young guest that you ran into at the Canfield Fair here today has had a good education, obviously. He's got ambition, obviously. He was well motivated, obviously, which speaks well for the Niles school system.
No, that speaks well for my parents.
Okay, your parents, but the school system had to contribute something.
The school system acts if I let it act. Now, I as a student chose to be a product of the school system,
but
and what it produces.
But you learned, did you not?
Because I chose to. There
of
are
course,
others who don't.
But yeah, that's not my point. It is there if you choose to. You chose to.
But the key answer there is Jonathan has parents who care.
That's exactly right.
And the point is, if you don't have that, what do you do?
And you go around the area here. Go to Boardman, go to Poland, go to Canfield. Those are school systems that are consistently, Howland in Trumbull County, that are consistently turning out responsible young adults who are motivated.
I'm maybe the only one in this panel that's a former teacher. And I taught in the Cleveland school system many years ago. And it was almost like a salvage operation because we got kids for a certain amount of time during the day. But everybody expected the teachers to perform these miracles when the kid went back to the community after school, went back to a family after school. And I think Jonathan said it right, that parents have to have more involvement with their kids. They just don't give them off to a school system and expect somebody to produce something that's not produced in the home.
But that goes back to a welfare system that rewarded people and rewarded fathers who left. I mean, that was a government social program that didn't work. And would you acknowledge that?
Well, lots of government programs didn't work, but lots of them have worked, too. But, you know,
But would you acknowledge that one of the cores, if you were to look at the last 50 years in America, one of the core changes in society is that you have the development of a welfare system that rewards fathers for leaving the house, which creates a lack of family structure in many areas around the nation. And would you add to that also media? Think about the answer. We've got to pause. I'm going to give you 2 minutes and 15 seconds to think of the answer. I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Inside Politics coming to you from Youngstown, Ohio tonight. Don't go away. Leroy Parnell, one of country music's hot young stars, is coming to the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago on Thursday, September 8th.
for the world premiere of The Road, country's hot new television series this fall.
Sad young wife never had a life. Her mother said she married young. And her husband's a fool, never listened to all the things she's never done. So she packs up that old Ford Fairlane. She's had a mile all she can bear. A suitcase, a hope, and a hard drink. She's gonna find it all somewhere on the road.
To see Leroy Purnell live in person, call 312-629-6023. That's 312-629-6023. Bruce Dumont back live on Inside Politics. If this is the first time you've heard this program, we are here every Sunday night, coast to coast, on this Inside Politics station. And as we do from time to time, we take this program on the road. We offer a Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, getting out into the hinterland, finding out how people are feeling about politics all over the United States. But we also keep you in touch with our phone number, 1-800-723-8289. We'll take a call in just a moment, but I want to mention also Jerry Austin. In addition, you've identified yourself as a former teacher. You're a former welfare worker, and also in 1988, you ran Jesse Jackson's campaign for President of the United States. So the question that I asked to you from all of those experiences, you were going to speak to my point before the break.
Well, I think what's happened over the years is that there has been developed a welfare society that I think President Clinton and other leading government officials are trying to address. You know, they talk about three strikes and you're out. I think the new welfare policy they're trying to initiate is probably 2 years and you're off. Trying to break the cycle, and that's what has to be done. They have to break the cycle. But along with breaking the cycle, they have to provide job training and daycare and all these other kind of things to get folks who have the ability to work, who have the ability to learn, who have the ability to develop a skill to do that, while never forgetting that the main victims of the welfare are the children. And so you have these cycles of kids becoming brought up on welfare and becoming on welfare themselves that has to be broken.
All right. If we must fight crime on more than one in one theater of war, if you will, let us now go to David. David, let's say that by the wave of the magic wand, it's 2 years and you're off welfare. What happens at the end of 2 years, and what responsibility, if any, does government have to provide training for an illiterate 16-year-old who was a mother of two, three, or four?
I think that's a big question, and it you would have.
That's why I turned to the Republican.
There you
I
go.
You'd have the answer.
There you go. Well, I think I
had a power for 40 years.
There
in
you
Congress.
Go.
I knew you'd have the answer.
I'd go back to the whole notion that we're killing the American dream in America. We need to first of all provide opportunities for people to have jobs. Before you can train them for a job, there's got to be a healthy, sustaining, growing climate.
How do you do that, though? Give me a specific.
Well, Ronald Reagan did it in the 1980s. You know, we talk about the decade of greed, but let's go back to 1979 when taxes were at 70%. We had 21% interest rates. We had inflation at about 18%. Reagan came in, reduced taxes from 70% to 30%, and spawned the greatest economic revitalization that we've seen in post-war history.
So a rising deficit is not a problem as you see it.
Well, I think look at the deficit in terms of the size of the product. And the deficit, when Ronald Reagan was done with office, was in terms of a percentage of the economy, was about where it was 30 years ago. Okay? That's
Jonathan,
a fact.
What is the what's the responsibility? I mean, how do you break this cycle of welfare from your perspective? And what do you see? I mean, the kids that you went that you just graduated from high school with, I mean,
some of them were 17 and had parents that were 33, 34. You know, so you learn, you image what you, I feel you're a product of your environment, and that's indisputable. So if you come from a family or a parent unit that where you see parents who had you when they were 17 and raised you through their early 20s, then what type of role model do you have to look forward to? I mean, what do you mimic what you're a product of? And so if you have a parental unit that acts in that respect, then how are you supposed to act?
Getting back to the core question that I asked at the beginning, you know, what responsibility government has and whether government has failed. And I think certainly the frustration and the anger that's out there is that government has failed, whether you're Republicans or Democrats. That's where the anger is, and it's real strong in this area because this district is represented by Congressman Traficant, who is one of the – who really is the spokesman for the frustrated and the angry in America, and he carries that passion with him on the floor of the United States Congress. But have the churches failed? Because we've talked about government failing, we've talked about education failing. Have the churches failed, Dan?
Have the churches failed? No, I don't think the churches have failed. I don't know what you mean. Have they failed? No, they have not failed.
Well, isn't that where the family values and the spiritual values and the response is? Isn't that where
if you go?
Find it
it's just as our young friend here remarked earlier, he went to the school and he chose to learn. People choose to go to church, and there are great numbers of people who are going to church, and they have parents who see to it that they get to church. But by the same token, there are great numbers that haven't. Now, if you say, well, the church has failed, if the parents don't take the kids to church, it's just as the parents here don't motivate a kid to choose to learn in school, you know, how are you going to do that? You can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Let's bring some folks from around the country into our conversation. Let's go to John. Listen to us on KNUZ Radio in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I saw on WGN Cable some of the news coverage about the 11-year-old in Chicago.
Yeah.
And they showed where this kid lived. He lived in the Chicago Housing Authority, and this building, it looked like it had stone cinder block walls. There was graffiti on it. It looked more like a prison. And I don't see how HUD can expect anyone to live there and become anything than a lost kid. There really needs to be some serious reform within HUD and how we attempt to do this public housing. And I haven't seen that taking place with Henry Cisneros. Jack Kemp made some attempts, but the Democrats Let me just say that
Henry Cisneros is trying to make a change because the Robert Taylor Homes in Chicago and a number of other of the federal housing developments, and we have perhaps the worst in the United States in Chicago, they are trying to make some significant changes. Part of it does get back to money because part of it is the buildings are deteriorating. The people that live there, their lives are deteriorating. There is no way out for many of them. And part of the responsibility is again, you are correct. You go back 35, 40 years ago, they were put in place. Again, somebody someplace thought it was a good idea. They didn't think it out. Jerry, you certainly know Chicago politics. You know that they were also enclaves to control the Democratic vote for big city votes around the United States. That was part of it. So they were a part of the political structure, and they fell apart. The concept of putting hundreds of poor people in one area without any support system at all, that's a bad idea, but it took us 35 years to realize it, and there have been hundreds of men, women, and children murdered in housing projects all over the United States because we haven't got that message yet.
Well, in Chicago, as you know, you don't have to turn on the TV and watch what's going on in Bosnia. You can watch what's going on in Chicago with the drive-by shootings and the kids that have been shot on the street playing in schoolyards and all that.
And many of them are about to be torn down.
Well, but what are we doing with those folks now that we don't need them for Democratic vote anymore? I mean, where are we putting them?
Well, you run into a real political problem here because those enclaves in many major cities are primarily black residents, and there are black political leaders now who fear that by dispersing those residents to suburban areas where the suburbanites don't want them, and by diluting their vote, you are diluting black political power. So you run into another vicious cycle of how a problem is ever going to be addressed.
Why don't we send them to Guantanamo?
You notice how you keep coming back to the core question, what can government do? And you've hit on it yourself, Bruce, a couple of times, and that is that it has been government action over the years in seeking votes from people that has created the situation that we have today, in my way of thinking, because they buy votes with programs such as a misguided welfare program, which, as you put it yourself, encourages people to have babies early on so they can get out of a situation. If a young girl has a baby, she's immediately able to set up housekeeping. The government takes care of her. She has another baby, they increase her money. They have another baby, they increase her money. It's a way of life. And one of the fellows that was just deposed, Chavez, I think, of the NAACP, had some very good things to say about the fact that this needs to be corrected, that there has to be some initiative, there has to be some motivation there, and government basically is standing in the way because the government counts on those votes, and the way to get those votes, more programs, more money.
And also we should mention that in that particular case, one of the specific reasons why Ben Chavez was dumped was because of his association with Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah, I understand that.
Whose rhetoric is extreme, has turned off a lot of people.
But there's a lot of truth in it.
But there's a lot of practical aspect of that.
Exactly.
And perhaps one of the reasons why he might have been a little too effective. Can you address that, Jerry?
Well, I think that, you know, we have a habit now of putting people into little boxes. And I think that there are good things that Louis Farrakhan stands for, and there are some things that he stands for that, you know, we don't like.
Reprehensible.
With the same with other people. But I don't believe anymore that politics and votes are determining how we deal with some of the problems that we're facing in 1994. I know in Chicago and in Cleveland and other areas of the country that we're not dealing with folks and their needs based upon a political vote.
We're going to go back to calls. Carol, listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead.
Oh, hello, Bruce?
Yep.
Oh, my name's Carl.
Carl, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm a little nervous, so I hope you can bear with me.
That's okay. Take a breath.
Okay, what I'm saying is that it seems like these days we're just spending both ends of the stick. Like, we're spending more on education than ever, and I'm so sick and tired of all the liberal critics and the liberal thinkers keep saying, spend more, spend more, spend more for education, and we're not getting no results. And at the other end, we're spending more on prisons too, which is perhaps what I quote the quote unquote as another entitlement, like people go in prisons regardless they're repeat offenders or not, they're getting all the entitlements like food, 3 squares a day, health care, and all this other stuff. And it's like, it never ends. It's a vicious cycle, and I'm sick and tired of paying for more. And another thing is,
by the way, when you talk about stability in some neighborhoods,
yeah.
And this is a very scary thing that I'm about to say.
Yeah.
In many cases, the only stability that people have ever had in their lives is when they go to prison. That's
no.
The only stability they've ever known in their lives is when they go to prison.
Because
you know, for the next 20 years, they don't have to worry about anything, and you're right. They're going to have a place over their head, and they're going to have 3 squares a day.
Yeah, courtesy of me, the taxpayer, got to pay for it, and I'm sick and tired of it. The only thing I was saying...
Well, do you want them in or do you want them out?
My favorite suggestion is execute them. They will save taxpaying dollars short and long run. That's all I can tell you.
For what crimes?
Well, like repeat offenses, like dangerous crimes and things of that sort, you know.
Well, a lot of people agree with that position. A lot of people would like to extend capital punishment to crimes beyond that of murder. 1-800-723-8289, Talking Politics tonight from Youngstown, Ohio. You want to make a comment on that?
I was just going to comment on the...
About once in every hour, someone in the United States dies in a fire.
Number 24, we spotted.
The fire at Robin Llewellyn's house started about 6:30 p.m.
I hurried to the room real fast, to my son's room, and the window was all in flames, and the blanket that was on my son was just burning.
But the Llewellyns didn't die that night, thanks to the National Association of State Fire Marshals Challenge Program. The challenge? To install smoke detectors in the homes of every disadvantaged family in America.
The smoke detector had saved not only the lives of my children, but myself.
But they need your help to buy more smoke detectors. Call 1-800-437-1016 with your pledge to the National Association of State Fire Marshals Challenge.
I might have lost everything in the house, the clothing and the furniture and stuff, but at least I didn't lose the children, and that's the most important thing. And that's what the smoke detector had saved.
Call 1-800-437-1016 today so a family like Robin Llewellyn's can be alive tomorrow.
Bruce Dumont back on Inside Politics. Thank you very much for joining us. Joining us around the table this week, we have Jerry Austin. He is our Democrat. David Johnson is our Republican. Dan Ryan, veteran talk show host from WKBN in our home station tonight, Youngstown, Ohio, joining us. And Jonathan Pentecost, who is 17 years old. He wants to be president of the United States. I don't think we've ever had a presidential aspirant this far in advance. We figured out it would be the year 2024 when you could first run for president again. But also, it's nice to have you with us representing the younger generation tonight on Inside Politics. You had a comment about the tax frustration that our last
the gentleman was. He said he was sick and tired of paying tax to keep people in prison, and basically his liberal view was execute them all. I think America is tired of paying money and not receiving anything. I don't receive any money from government. I'm sure that anyone at this table doesn't receive money from government. But yet those who don't pay, those who are on welfare, are the ones that are receiving all the benefits from government. And it's frustrating as a younger and future citizen of this country that I don't receive anything, but yet I pay. I pay without benefit. And those who don't pay are receiving all the benefit.
What are you happy about what government gives you, Dan?
Not much. I'm happiest probably about local government than I am about national government. I am happy with the government and the community I live in concerning the police protection I get, concerning the school system that they operate, and so on, and the other things that I get locally. On the national level, I feel confident and secure that we have a good military. Constitution basically says that we should maintain, and that's the only thing they do state that the Congress should do is maintain a military.
Do you think
basically
things are efficient?
Pardon me?
Is government efficient? Do you think the lines between what local government does and state and federal government, are those lines clear, or should they be clearer?
They're not clear any longer, you're right, and they probably should be clearer. There are some states, as a matter of fact, that are drawing those lines more clearly. They're going after sovereignty. They're
That's
saying
right.
they want states' rights. They a don't want the federal government interfering with them.
A lot of governors, in fact, Georgia, Governor Voinovich of Ohio is the head of the National Governors Association Conference, which is specifically looking in the area of expanded states' rights of governors around the United States.
No question.
We're going to go to another call. Let's go to Chuck, listening to us on COGO in San Diego. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment. I'm having a real trouble with the Clinton administration coming out with their crime bill. They're coming out and now they're gonna have some kind of supposed welfare reform. It seems like what their strategy is to try and co-opt what are traditionally conservative ideas without any of the substance that goes along with them. They're gonna say they're gonna be reforming welfare like they said they're reforming the crime issue, and then when you get down to the particulars of the bills that they have, they're the same old social programs, liberal ideas that have failed for the last 30 years and have basically got us into the position we're in now.
Do you believe, sir, that one political party or one political philosophy has all the answers to America's ills?
No, I think that because conservatives hold to traditional values, they hold to things that have been proven over time. So
define, if you will, a traditional value.
A traditional value on which issue?
On
crime?
On crime, yeah.
On crime is that you're tough with the criminals. You punish them when they do wrong so that people know if they commit a crime, they're going to have to pay the consequences. You don't coddle the criminal. That's been traditionally a liberal viewpoint. See, the liberals have wanted to come up and try all these new solutions to the problems. They come up with all of these pointy head.
And most haven't worked.
And those have not worked. And if you go out among the people in this country, you're going to see that most people now have admitted, and even the liberals are admitting now that their solutions in the past didn't work. That's why they're trying to co-opt the views of the conservatives.
Let me ask you the question now, which I asked this panel a few moments ago. Let's wave the magic wand. Let's say that the welfare system in the United States immediately states that after 2 years, if you're able-bodied, you get no more welfare. What do you do to help, if any, what do you do to help those that are currently on welfare who don't have the intellect, don't have the training to get a job in the next 2 years, and when those 2 years come and go, they are 16 years of age, they are illiterate, and they have several children? What do you do specifically to those children, given the traditional values of conservatism? What does a conservative do to those people who are literally not only on the brink, they are in the cesspool of life? What do you do, Paul?
First of all, your time schedule of 2 years, I think, is arbitrary, and we can't go by that. We're going to have to study the problem and see how we can gradually get off something that's taken 30 years to develop.
So 2 years is too quick.
What?
2 years
is
too quick.
Too quick.
All right, that sounds like a very liberal side of what you're saying,
well,
sir.
We're in a problem that was caused by liberals, and us thinking conservatives are going to have to do a lot more thinking to get ourselves out of the bind that you unthinking liberals have gotten us into.
David,
I think it's going to take time. You need to wean people slowly off of this dependency role. I know in our county, in a small rural county, can you imagine spending $100 million on welfare in Columbiana County, Ohio.
So 2 years and off is not a good idea.
It can happen in that short a period of time. It's got to be over a prolonged period of time. We've got to gradually wean people off of the dependency roles and into the jobs, job market.
How did that thing work in New Jersey? I know they implemented something where after you have so many children, then you don't get any increase, and they cut down the birth rate among these women. Are you familiar with that, Jerry?
No.
The state of New Jersey implemented this. And from statistics that I've read, it has worked out fairly well because their rate of birth among welfare patients has dropped, welfare recipients has dropped considerably since they implemented
it. We'll check that out. We'll have somebody on from New Jersey in the next couple of weeks. Chuck, thank you very much. Let's move to Alice from Boardman, Ohio. We've been talking about Boardman, a listener of WKBN. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
I remember seeing you at the fair today.
Great.
Very enjoyable.
Terrific. Well, it was nice to meet a lot of the people who listened to this program who came up and said hello to us at the WKBN booth.
Yes, you and Mr. Rivers.
Right.
A few others there, your producer and so forth. But what I wanted to talk about was just this gentleman that said how terrible these public housings were and how HUD could let that happen. I believe
yep.
it was from Texas.
Yep. I said that. I said that
said
as
it,
well.
Right. All right, regardless. Mm-hmm. That is not the point. Those places are absolutely very livable when they are constructed. The ones in our area that I'm specifically thinking of, Westlake, when those were built right after the war, there were many of our veterans. I was there many times and visited with many of my friends that lived there. And they were very, very nice because housing was such a shortage.
Right.
And those people lived there until they got enough money to buy their own homes or to rent other apartments, because actually there were no apartments. And those places were kept up. But today, about every year or every 2 years, they're all renovated. And what happens a short time after that? The pipes are pulled out, the doors are pulled off, the windows are broken. What do you blame that on?
Let me mention that they're not rented. I can only talk about what I know from my experiences in Chicago, and they are not all immediately renovated. And another significant change, you are correct, that initially public housing, they were for families.
Yes.
And public housing, at least in the city of Chicago, it represented a percentage of your rent. Again, now listen to this. 25% of the people who live in a particular apartment in public housing, 25% goes to rent. So if you're one person and you have one job, 25% goes to the landlord. If you've got two people, it's 25% of their collective. If you've got three or four people, so if you have a whole family that's together and they're all working, they may be paying $700 or $800 a month to live in public housing, because it's 25% of now again. Some would argue that is a disincentive for families to stay together. Number two, another significant thing happened about 20 years ago, and that is that the requirements to get into public housing, they diluted those requirements.
Mm-hmm.
They diminished them to such an extent that basically anybody and their brother could come in.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a lower class of people moving into public housing.
Definitely.
And on top of that, many of them, you are correct, did not take care of their homes, and they were they didn't have the skills or didn't have the intellect knowing how to keep their houses clean. And another important point is they're 35, 40 years older, so you have natural deterioration in housing stock as well. So all four of those things have led to this cesspool called public housing in most areas of the United States.
Yes, but you know, when somebody owns a house for 35 or 40 years, under normal conditions, they repair it and keep it up, and it's fantastic.
If they have money.
Well,
if
yes.
they have a job.
Well, and this brings me to my second point, and then I'll get off.
Can I just tell you one more thing?
Yes.
If you live in public housing in Chicago and you want to move to private housing, because your last address was public housing, they will ask you sometimes for 2 or 3 months of security deposit. So if you live in public housing and you're moving to a place, they may ask you for $2,100 in security deposit. How many people listening to the program right now could come up with $2,100 if asked to do so? Again, especially if you're at the poverty level. We've got to move on. Thanks very much for your call. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll be back for another hour live from Youngstown, Ohio. Hop on the line. We've got callers waiting, and we will go to them when we return after the network news. I'm Bruce Dumont. We're coming to you live from Youngstown, Ohio.
World within reach by Freeman Cosmetics, inspired by everything natural, and by Big Red. Big Red gum gives you long-lasting fresh breath.
Again, everybody, and welcome to Casey's Countdown. I'm Casey Kasem, and I'm all set to count down the most popular songs on this week's National AC Chart. Our rankings come from the official survey of adult contemporary radio stations from across the nation. The survey is conducted by Radio and Records, the industry's number one newspaper. Well, we have one debut this week, and it's a big one, a brand new hit by Elton John, his latest from The Lion King. But before we start counting them down to number one, let's take a look at the songs that topped the chart last week. At number three, Anytime You Need a Friend by Mariah Carey. At number two, John Secada with If You Go. And at number one, for the 11th week in a row, Elton John's current hit from The Lion King, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Now Elton's going for a 12th big week at number one. Will he make it? Only one way to find out. Let the countdown begin.
Number 20.
Holding Steady is the first of the three remakes on this week's survey. Here are Huey Lewis and the News with their 1994 version of the 1966 J.J. Jackson hit, But It's All Right. their CD of remakes called Four Chords and Several Years Ago, that's Huey Lewis and the News with But It's All Right. This week, the song stands pat at number 20. And spending a second week at number 19 on Casey's Countdown, here's British singer-songwriter Lauren Christie with a song from the Bruce Willis film Color of Night. Here's The Color of the Night.
You and I, moving in the dark, bodies close, but souls apart, shadowed smiles, secrets unrevealed, I need.